welcome back to another installment of the Uninformed Gamers Podcast. I am one of your hosts. You know me. You love me. I am Darkness Tiger, joined here by my two illustrious co-hosts. First, we have Rad Dreams Review, also known as Mason.
Hello.
And then we have my brother from the same mother, iChameleon, also known as Chris.
Yo.
What's going on, gentlemen? How has it been? What's been up? What has been new? We will start with you, Mason.
Well, haven't really been able to game too much because I've been busy with work obligations. I am out of town for some work training, currently in Illinois. So I will be coming back to the good old Buckeye State on Friday the 13th, appropriate. But I have been watching quite a bit of anime, so that has been nice. A lot of new shows that are super interesting have released, and I've been checking those out. To name a few, there's Frieren. Which is basically like a fantasy anime that covers like immortality and like survivor's guilt that comes along with that. Like the main character is an elf who, historically in mythology and like fantasy, elves are known to live for a very, very long time. So it basically touches on the downfalls of that, which is kind of cool. And then another one that came out that is super interesting, that's about, it's a appropriate gaming anime for once, called Shangri-La Frontier. It's basically take a guy who's a tryhard when it comes to video games. Like imagine a Dark Souls enthusiast guy who min-maxes everything, who's like super, super hardcore, speedruns, you know, all that shit. He decides to try out basically a AAA game that is very, very popular because he wants to test his mettle against it. And so far, it's been really fun, a fun watch. So those are like the two big ones.
All right. Chris, what's been up in your world?
Yeah. Been playing some RuneScape, I think. Some Destiny. I did get to put like another like 2 hours into Starfield. I thought I was gonna have longer.
Mm-hmm.
So that was cool. I beat the simulator, Devin. You'll probably know what this is, on the hardest difficulty.
Ooh.
That's interesting.
Taking a page out of my book, eh? No.
It was hard as fuck.
Was it really?
I sat there honestly for those 2 hours basically trying to beat the fucking thing.
Wow.
I was getting really mad. That thing was hard. Like tier 5 and 6 were ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeesh.
Womp, womp, womp.
Let me think. Outside of that, been watching anime. So I am fully caught up again on One Piece.
Hey.
I took your recommendation, Mr. Mason, and I did watch Shangri-La.
How'd you like that first episode?
It had me cracking the fuck up. He's like, fucking a goon.
Yeah, like, it had one of the most, like, hilarious openings that I've seen in an anime in a while.
Oh, yeah. Where I was like, what?
Where he just fucking, like, drop kicks that bitch in the face. I was like,
oh! Oh, yeah. I was like, damn. I was like, what the hell did she do? And then he goes to explain. I was like, oh, I see.
She deserved it.
She was shitty.
She was.
Yeah, damn, though, that's been fun. That's
damn
a fun
NPC.
One. Uh-huh. Also caught up on Jujutsu Kaisen.
Yes.
That's been good.
That's been a good watch so far.
Mm-hmm. And then I watched the most recent season of Demon Slayer. That was awesome.
Oh, nice. That was with the, oh god, what arc was that? The
Swordsmith.
Yes, yeah, yep. Swordsmith arc. So what were your thoughts on that?
So it kind of didn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're like, no one knows where this village is, but so the dudes found it, and they're like, I would assume that now everyone knows where it is, and they're just, they're not moving. They're staying in the same spot. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, okay, interesting. It had a cool fight, and I finally seeing the main character, like, really, like, getting further on and everything, but, like,
yeah, Tanjiro.
Tanjiro. I always forget his damn name.
No, you're good.
But yeah, I don't know. It felt weird. I don't know why. I can't explain it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the newest season, the Swordsmith arc, in my opinion, has been the weakest season so far. I also didn't really appreciate the enemies. I felt like there wasn't a lot of stakes with the enemies, and then a lot of their powers were weird, and it didn't really serve a good, interesting purpose. And then, like, the thing that bothered me the most, I would say, is the fake outs that the show has been doing with the demons. Like, so no longer, this isn't really a spoiler, but I'll say spoiler, I guess. The demons now, it's like you cut their head off, but, oh, by the way, they're not actually dead. And then they try to do like a fake out with it. And it's just like, fool me once, you know, that's on me, but fool me twice, shame on me. And it's just, it's predictable. And I am not the biggest fan of that. I thought basically the Entertainment District arc has been the strongest.
Uh-huh.
And then behind that, obviously the Mugen Train arc was probably close behind that. And then the first season was fine.
Yeah, I agree. So yeah, Mugen Train was awesome, and so was the Entertainment District.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll get back to it, but I'm curious, like, what the obviously I don't mean read the manga, so I don't really know what happens, but
yeah, I'm curious where they're going next. Yeah, I'm an anime only for that as well, so
yeah.
What have you been up to, Devin?
Actually, it's been a pretty adventurous week for me. Did I tell you guys I went to go see the movie The Creator?
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I actually got an opportunity to see The Creator with some friends last weekend. I think it was last weekend, or might have been the weekend before.
Yeah.
And for those of you guys who do not know, The Creator is actually a fairly new movie that came out, directed by Gareth Edwards, a name you might recognize from Rogue One, a Star Wars movie, the 2014 Godzilla, the Star Wars The Last Jedi. So he has actually quite a lot of fairly decent movies, because I'm not going to say good, because Godzilla and The Last Jedi could arguably be that they weren't good. But he actually has a sizable repertoire. So what The Creator is, it's basically a movie set well into the future, and it has a discussion about artificial intelligence, robotics, and its relationships to humans.
Yeah.
Now, I went with a group of people who I have suggested movies to them in the past that they have absolutely hated. Actually sent me a video telling me how much they hated it, was the movie Nope.
Oh, really? Okay, that's
interesting. They did not understand it. They did not get it. They thought it was terrible, and they wished they would never have seen it, and they wish they could have gotten their money back. And so I was like, you know what? Let me invite them to go see this Creator. The Creator is starring John David Washington, the son of Denzel Washington. Mm-hmm. You might recognize John Washington if you've seen the movie Tenet. And I will say, this movie, if this movie had a bigger budget, this movie would be on the level of Dune and Star Wars.
Really? I mean, what makes you say that?
Honestly, I expected it, like, when we're watching the film, though it's like very high future, high tech, you can actually see a couple like scenes where it felt like this is a movie that was kind of cheaply made. And when I look at the Creator budget, it was actually $80 million. Okay.
Oh, that's actually kind of surprising. Yeah. That's pretty inexpensive.
Exactly. Because if we look at the Last Jedi budget itself, the Last Jedi budget was $300 million.
Yeah.
So about a quarter. And if they would have spent more money on making the film look beautiful and futuristic, I think it definitely could have been on a whole different level. But story-wise, this was a film that I think everybody should watch, especially if you're invested in the technology sphere.
Mm-hmm.
It really does ask a few questions. And one of the questions were, is at what point does AI, and at what point does AI really become too humanoid for us?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things in the film is that there is a weapon that has been created. Basically, AI computers and the humans are at war. Humans are basically winning by a very large margin. But the AI have found a way to fight back by creating a weapon. The difference with this weapon is that this is an AI. It's a child. And this child can actually grow like a human.
Which is, that's an interesting concept for the film.
Yeah, because beforehand, when you talk about AI, a lot of the computers, a lot of the AI things were just, they were created in a factory. And though they're very smart, and though they're very humanoid-like, they cannot age and they cannot reproduce.
Yeah, they're stagnant.
They're stagnant. And so the question was, is just like, is this an actual human or is this mm-hmm. not? And it takes a very, very good turn. Me and my friends who I went with all thoroughly walked out. We thoroughly enjoyed the movie. We all said it was excellent. And as I was sitting there, I said that this movie has a lot to do, and it's a very anti-US military propaganda movie.
Oh, really? Okay. Wow.
Because the AI have actually fled into like Eastern Asia, so you can get like Vietnam vibes.
Mm.
And the wow. American, the humans have created this weapon that is like this very sizable drone. And when okay. And this drone itself is like Godzilla. Like you see it coming and you know there's nothing you can do but flee. You remember, you guys probably, I know Chris didn't, but in Mass Effect there was the Reapers.
Yeah, I remember the Reapers in Mass Effect.
The Reapers were basically an omnipotent, gigantic creature that can destroy anything once they kind of made it to their planet. Mm-hmm. That's basically what this drone was. This drone would lock on a target and drop, it wasn't a nuclear bomb, but it could destroy it to the equivalency of a nuclear bomb just on small villages. And the AI had a problem with this because they're just like, if we allow this thing to continue operating, it will destroy us. And it was a fantastic film because as you're watching the film, you're fully on the human side because it's explained as to how this war started.
Mm-hmm.
But as the movie goes on, you start questioning a little bit of everything and you start switching the sides in which you exist on.
Interesting.
So overall, if it would have had a higher budget, I probably would have given a 5. Because it didn't have such a great budget, and this is one of the movies where I was like, it could have been longer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually going to give this movie a 4 Uninformed Gamers out of 5.
Okay.
Nice.
But
nice.
But it still sounds like it's worth seeing.
Oh, 100%. A lot of people, for some reason, didn't like it. A lot of people didn't understand it. But I didn't think this was a difficult movie to understand at all. I thought this movie was absolutely excellent. And I went with two movie critics who are very critical, and they both thought it was excellent.
Mm.
So, you know, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I actually didn't know for the longest time that was Denzel Washington's son.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think I literally just found out last week. I was like, I actually really like him because he was in Ballers.
It wasn't Ballers.
Yes. So I came to know him from that TV series. And then I watched Tenet. I think that's right. What it's called, right? Yeah, yeah. Tenet. And I was like, okay, this is cool. This movie was cool. And so I like his work. I like the stuff that he's been in so far.
Yeah, he was also in Black Klansman as well as the movie Amsterdam.
Yes, I did watch Black Klansman. I did not watch Amsterdam.
I really need to watch that, the Black Klansman.
It was fantastic, pretty good.
Spike Lee film.
It was great.
I've heard it's amazing. I've heard the book is even better.
Well, it's based on a true story.
Yeah, I know that.
Yeah. And I actually listened to a podcast with the actual like African-American who was involved in the story.
Oh, really? And, that's awesome.
And when you listen to the podcast, as you're hearing his voice, had you not known he was Black, you would assume he was white.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like he actually talks like the nerdiest white guy you've ever mm-hmm. met. So
that's probably how he was able to slip in.
Yes, probably.
So but funny.
I will say, if you have not yet seen The Creator, it is currently still in theaters. I'm going to say if you can probably see it on like a Tuesday matinee, definitely check mm-hmm. it out. It's well worth it. but go in with an open mind. But do me a favor, if you are not familiar as to what the story arc is, go in as blind as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what I did, and that's what I did with my friends. I said, hey, I will show you one trailer, a 30-second clip, but we cannot look at anything else before we go in. And we were all very pleasantly surprised by it.
Oh, good.
Yep. So I finished watching that. I'm currently watching One Piece. I spent 3 hours of my day yesterday watching the live-action One Piece.
Nice.
Are you liking it?
I spent 3 hours of my day watching it yesterday. So yeah, I'm liking it. I like the character direction. I'm actually just made it to the episode where the chef is brought in.
Yeah, yeah. Sanji. Yeah.
Sanji. I will say the guy with what is the thing that you shoot? The little
slingshot?
He is the most annoying character I have ever seen on TV.
Oh, Usopp.
Usopp is annoying as hell.
God, yeah. Usopp, you leave him alone.
No. F him.
He's a god. Leave him alone.
He's written that way on purpose.
I could tell. Like, there's no way this character could be this just actually bad.
He's got incredible foresight. I will give him that.
I'm sure he does. But as I'm sitting there watching his introduction episode, and he's like, nobody believes him that there's pirates. And this isn't a spoiler alert. This is just the TV show. Nobody believes that there's pirates. He doesn't even explain why he thinks there's pirates. He's just like, oh, there's pirates. He doesn't give anybody any other detail. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, I wouldn't believe you either.
So like,
and I'm sitting here watching it.
The background, the live action show doesn't really do a good job of that. But the anime and manga do a lot better job of explaining why he does that. So just a little bit of context for why he does that is because his father basically abandoned him and his mother when he was a young child to pursue a life on the seas as a pirate. Terrible father. And I don't understand why Usopp regards his father so highly because of that. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. But anyway, the reason why he does that is because his mother, who's dying, basically said something along the lines of, oh, when your father gets back, I'll get better or something like that. And so Usopp kind of gets it into his head of basically lying every single day and running through the town saying, oh, pirates are coming to kind of lie to himself as well as his mother that, hey, dad is coming back because, you know, he's a pirate. So that's kind of like why he does it, is kind of like a to gaslight himself.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, gotcha. That makes it a little bit of that was kind of explained in live action about his father being a pirate, about his mother being sick. But you don't grasp that he's doing that because he's lying to himself. Yeah, I would never pick that up.
Yeah. So they cover that a lot better in the manga and in the anime itself. It's the show kind of glossed past that, unfortunately.
No, I'm still enjoying it, but believe it or not, there was actually, though I'm attempting to finish One Piece right now, there was actually a show I started after One Piece and finished it before One Piece.
Oh, what show is that?
I actually hopped onto Peacock and I finally sat down and watched Twisted Metal.
Ooh, nice.
You like it?
I have to say, this show has a lot of charm.
Okay. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, I saw you watching it.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest Anthony Mackie fan, and I don't know why. I just think visually he's unsettling to me.
Yeah.
But because he looks weird. But I will say, after watching this, I'm like, you know what? I like Anthony Mackie. I think he's a phenomenal actor.
That reminds... Go ahead.
Oh, no. One of the things that I will say is that I appreciate like all of like the little like tidbits to the original game. Like, I really like that. But there was a couple times where I'm like, I need to Google this because I don't remember who you are. So yeah, thoroughly appreciated Twisted Metal. I actually finished it. I think I finished the entire, it was either 6 or 8. It might have even been up to 10 episodes. I finished it in about 3 days because it's only 30 minutes per episode. Thoroughly enjoyed it. If you have an opportunity to see it, I would say check it out. I can 100% see how this show is not for everybody, but it did get me hooked into it, and I did finish the first season.
Oh. Okay. Speaking of television, before we move on to our main topics for today, the two shows that I have been watching on Hulu, I think they're both on Hulu, if I'm not mistaken. Either one's on Hulu and the other's on HBO Max. I think that's how it is. But anyway, the one show is, you know, What We Do in the Shadows on Hulu. And then the one on HBO Max is called Our Flag Means Death.
How is that? I've been hearing great things.
It's absolutely amazing. You would love it.
I do love pirates.
Chris, you might actually like it as well. No, they're both very comedic shows. The What We Do in the Shadows is basically a dry British comedy sort of thing. It's kind of like The Office in how it's in how it's structured, but instead of office life, it is vampire life, just structured as like a reality TV show.
Isn't What We Do in the Shadows, wasn't that like an older movie or an old TV series that they turned into a movie that they turned back into a show?
Yes.
Okay.
And then Our Flag Means Death is a pirate show about, it's a, based off of a true story about this a gentleman pirate. Basically, he was a aristocrat and was tired of his life of being one. And so he sought a life on the high seas as a pirate.
Again, right up my alley. I attempted to watch, I think it was the show, it was called Black Flag. I got like two episodes in. I was like, this isn't for me.
Yeah, so, the Flag Means Death is a strict comedy.
Okay.
There are some action bits, but for the most part, it is a comedy. And it is very pro-LGBTQ, which is really cool and refreshing to see in a show. So that's a nice breath of fresh air.
Nice. All right. Well, I'll have to go ahead and watch it and get an opportunity to watch it. Now, I will have something for us in the review segment. But for now, let's hop into our first story. And our first story has to do with somebody stepping down.
Yes, thank God.
Who could have guessed that Unity had so much backlash that the Unity CEO stepped down?
Yep, John, I will most likely mispronounce his last name, but Riccitiello, he's probably Italian. but yeah, he stepped down.
Were you guys were you guys expecting this? Because I was expecting this.
100%. Either he was going to step down, or he was either going to get voted out by the board.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, one of those things was going to happen.
Yeah, this is the same guy that wanted to charge $1 per reload so in Battlefield. Yep. So, yeah, it was bound to happen.
Yep, sorry, go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I'm just always confused on, like, guys that are so radical like that. Like, you saw how they were with their last company. Why the hell would you hire them on as your CEO?
Yeah.
It's just like, come on now, that's just silliness. You were, like, begging it for something silly like this to happen.
And well, the controversy in which he had to step down for wasn't the worst thing he, I would say that is the worst thing, but the second worst thing that he did was Unity as a company fired a little bit over 600 employees this year and closed half of its offices.
Gotta save that money.
It's like, 'cause they're feeding it all to the CEO.
Mm-hmm. And then they had that business, I'm trying to remember what the other thing they had, think of it.
Now, one thing that I have not yet seen is usually when we see these executives step down, there's usually a golden parachute. There usually is an exit. There's usually an exit, deal that you get. Do you think this guy is going to be walking away with millions after he drove Unity straight into the ground?
The pessimist in me says yes.
Yes, I agree.
I just hate this because everybody now universally regards Unity as a terribly run company. And this guy who ran into the ground is going to get millions on his way out.
Yep.
If you run a company into the ground, like we can talk about Bobby Kotick being this an absolute slumlord, but what you can't disagree is that he did make Activision Blizzard rather sizable.
True.
He's getting a golden parachute, and that kind of makes sense, even though he is an absolute scumbag of a human.
Yes.
Correct. This guy is a scumbag of a human who doesn't really have a whole lot to show for his scumbaggery.
Yeah. So, yeah, to kind of like piggyback on that as well, Devin, like you kind of hit the nail on the head with saying, even though Bobby Kotick is a scumbag, you cannot argue that he catapulted Activision Blizzard into the behemoth that it is today.
Yeah.
I don't know. Chris, do you expect this guy to be getting another executive CEO job at another gaming company, or do you think this is his one and done?
He's probably going to retire, be real with you.
Yeah.
Once your name has been muddied in the water like this, who's going to hire you? Like, unless you start your own company, I doubt it. I really doubt he's going to get another role as a CEO.
He's most likely going to retire because, I mean, you got to think, he's 65 years old.
Yeah.
So I don't see him doing anything else after this.
No. I say he retires probably, and that's the end of it. You'll probably never hear this dude's name again.
I hope not, but I am curious. Crap. He was making a little bit of chum change every year.
What was he making?
At Unity, he made $11.8 million in total compensation.
God, dang.
His salary was $380,000, but everything else equated to $11.8 million. So stock awards and his stock awards was $8.3 million, and his value of options awards was $3.0 million. So that brings his total compensation to $11.8 million. So yeah, he's about to get a couple million on his way out too.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
Well, he tanked that stock. So he might have screwed himself a bit there.
You know he sold his stock before he made that announcement.
Yeah,
I think that was true.
Insider trading.
Yep, there was some insider trading going on.
But is it insider trading if you sell the stock before you make your own announcement?
Yes.
Yes. Interesting.
Like, hey guys, I'm about to pull an Elon and I'm about to shut this stock down.
Because, I mean, that's exactly what happened with Martha Stewart. Well, not exactly, but yeah, something very similar.
She got outside information for somebody who had knowledge of the source. So in my opinion, this John Riccitelli guy, if he were to tell a friend, hey, go ahead and sell this stock because I'm about to make a major announcement that might drop down the stock prices, that's insider trading. But if he sells his stocks before he makes his announcement that happens to drop his stock, I don't think this can be considered insider trading. That would just be bad luck.
Think about it like this, though.
It's a bit of a gray area.
So, like, I see what you're saying, but, like, he could sell his stock, right?
Yeah.
And then he, knowing that it's going to tank the price of the stock, and then when he leaves, he could buy this stock up in hopes that his announcement is going to turn around everything, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he just made up a load of money.
Yeah, there's a couple different scenarios in which he can manipulate.
Yeah.
I mean, the way he can manipulate this is if he sold his stock at a high price point.
Yep.
He makes his announcement. The stock drops. He walks out, gets his golden parachute, uses the golden parachute money to buy back all the stocks in which he just sold them for money for a discount. And that, in my opinion, would be insider trading. So I guess he could do it, but I'm sure people do this all the time.
Yeah.
But very, very scummy.
Yeah. So from what we know, this guy named James Whitehurst will be taking over as the interim CEO. He was formerly the CEO for a open source software company called Red Hat. And then he was also president at IBM until 2022. So hopefully this James guy does a better job.
Somebody in the IGN, I was looking at IGN for the story. Somebody in the IGN comment says, and off he goes through in the reputation of another company.
Yep.
And a comment says, it amazes me that CEOs who trash companies seem to have no problem getting another equivalent position.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I don't know. I'm a firm believer that most CEOs are useless. You would need just a board of directors.
It's
most
just CEOs a figurehead position.
It is. It's like president of the United States. It's just a figurehead. It's just the tone of the company.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's go going to talk about somebody who's stepping down. That brings us a little bit to Sony, because as you guys are all aware, Jim Ryan has decided to step down. And we didn't put this in the story, but I will tell you. Last episode, I said, mark my words, there was going to be something else that comes out of this, out of him stepping down. So apparently, remember how we talked about how Sony got hacked?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that hack was much bigger than Sony confirmed.
Oh, was it?
Yes. So Sony confirms data breach impacting thousands in the U.S.
Oof.
Yeah. So I had a sinking suspicion that that was going to happen. But you know what was interesting? Which I guess was revealed once this information came to fruition. Like once it was announced that Sony got hacked. Do you know what was unveiled?
What?
Apparently, Sony is creating a PS5 Slim that they took a new digital edition PS5. They never said PS5 Slim. They said Sony is launching a PS5 digital edition. Mm-hmm. And Mason, this is where I texted you. I said, this already exists. What makes this different? And I actually had to Google it. And I had to go to like a couple links to see, oh, it's a PS5 Slim.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the kicker. It's only slim by a couple centimeters. Like, it's barely slim. Like, the original, like, let's look at the PS5 launch model. The PS5 launch model for the digital edition was 390 millimeters by 260 millimeters by 104 millimeters. So, this new PS5, oh no, let me look at the digital. Sorry, that was the regular one. The original Digital 5 launch edition model was 390 millimeters by 260 millimeters by 92 millimeters. This new one is 358 millimeters by, I think it's like 216 millimeters by 80 millimeters. So it is the equivalency of like 15 millimeters smaller. But you would think, oh, okay, well, maybe it's cheaper. Oh, no, it is not. It is $50 more expensive than the current digital edition.
Which makes no sense to me.
Literal zero.
Personally.
Well, there are a slight differences between this new slim model and the regular digital.
Mm-hmm.
So while the new PS5s aren't any more powerful than the launch model, so it's the exact same specs, both models, so now the new slim edition, now have 1 terabyte of storage,
okay.
which is up from the 825 gigabytes offered in launch models. Furthermore, Sony is offering the option to add an Ultra HD Blu-ray disc drive to the PS5 Digital Edition at any time for $80, which, again, you could just buy a regular PS5 and have that included for free.
Yep.
The new models also have 4 separate cover panels with top two sporting a glossy look at the bottom remaining matte. It's also important to note that the new PS5 Digital Edition has gone up in price by $50 when compared to the launch model. So the new PS5 model Slim with the Ultra HD Blu-ray disc drive already installed with the same price as the original at $499. And the new PS5 Digital Edition will now be $449 instead of $399. And Sony will also sell you, again, a new vertical stand that will be available for $29.
They are just trying to milk that.
Dude, so, they nickel and dime you so fucking much.
Yeah.
It's infuriating.
So if you guys want to buy a PS5 this season, and for some reason you don't want one that is a couple millimeters bigger, that includes everything you want, usually in a bundle for a cheaper, you can actually run out to the stores, buy a slimmer one, pay $80 to add a Blu-ray disc player to it, and hopefully it sells out. I think that Sony... I don't know what Sony's doing anymore. I don't know either.
Honestly, I hope their sales start hurting from this nonsense that they're trying to do.
And one of my favorite comments is they increased the price for a 3-year-old spec.
Yep.
They did. Like, you did nothing to justify the... What?
Oh, I was going to say, the only thing that they did was increase the space... And then they decreased the size.
Which the space, here's my thing with storage. It doesn't cost any more money to make a hard drive 100 gigabytes or 2 terabytes. What? So like they're actually, yeah, you're getting more space, but like it actually is going to be the same amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, they're just literally just making out if anyone buys this thing.
But the problem is people are going to buy it. This is going, you're going to see scalpers the second this is released, because I don't know
without
if
it has a
release date. Oh, yeah. I mean, we saw that when the PS5 just regularly came out was scalpers. And now we are finally at a point where they're easier to get, but still difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah, but interestingly enough, I went to the movie with two movie critics. And one of the movie critics actually bought a PS5 about a week after I did. And after we were walking out of the movie and after we got through talking about the creator, we were at a bar and we were talking about our PS5s. And you know what we both said? And I've always been an Xbox guy. I got a PS5 just so I could see what the hype was about. Mm-hmm. He's always been a PlayStation guy, because so he got a PS5 just because that was the next one. Do you know what he said about his PS5?
What?
That it's fine.
He didn't even say that. He says, I don't even play it anymore. It was just hype. He was like, I'm considering selling it. He was like, I don't see the reason why I own this console.
Yeah, because here's my thing. They tout exclusive on PlayStation. But like what exclusives besides God of War and let's say Spider-Man? And I'll even throw Ratchet and Clank in there. What exclusives mm-hmm. of everyone flocking to on there? I'm just like, I'm struggling to see. Like sure, they've had a lock on some Final Fantasy things, which has been really weird.
That doesn't help Square Enix at all.
No, no Square's seeing, they're like, wow, we fucked up. We've made a silly decision, and their CEO left probably because of it. So I don't know. I have so many questions.
My thing is that when you look at the top 10 selling games on PlayStation 5, it's usually not exclusives.
No, they're multi-platforms. It's probably Apex, Call of Duty, and who knows what else, Fortnite.
Every single friend that I have who has a PS5 only bought it so they can play their PS4 games.
Or that.
Yeah. Like my coworker buddy, he bought a PS5 so he can play Fall Guys.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
You know what's funny? PlayStation's the main one that'll remaster all of those games that were just on PS4.
Yeah. And people will buy them. Like The Last of Us. I heard that they're thinking about a Last of Us Part 2 remaster.
That doesn't surprise me.
Okay, this wasn't in our topics, but I heard. So The Last of Us was supposed to have some multiplayer mode that was supposed to release with it. It was either Last of Us or Last of Us Part 2. It was called like Factions, right? Mm-hmm. It was supposed to come out with the game. So this was a while back. They decided that they weren't going to be able to make it in time for the release. So they were like, we're going to have to delay it. They delayed basically indefinitely. And at one point we're like, okay, we're actually going to have to make it a separate game that you're going to have to pay for. So recently, I guess I think something went on at Insomniac, because I believe Insomniac owns The Last of Us. I might be wrong on that studio name. Mm-hmm. But regardless, basically the Factions mode has been put on fucking ice, like basically non-existent. They're basically stopping complete production of it.
Mm. Yeah, I saw on Gaming Bible that one of the executives says that The Last of Us multiplayer game is completely canceled.
Yeah.
And if I recall correctly, this game actually appeared at a PlayStation State of Play. Like, they actually did talk about this game. They
showcased it.
Yeah, and Chrissy brought up a great point. They actually said that, oh, well, this was supposed to be part of the game. Then it was going to be DLC, but we won't have time because there's a new console. We'll make it a spinoff game. And they canceled it.
Jesus. Jeez.
One thing I'll give Ubisoft credit for, they will not cancel the game no matter how expensive it is.
Oh, my God. Oh, my goodness.
I missed the last playtest. I'm hoping to get into one of them again.
Womp, same. But we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that game when it finally comes out. I think that game is going to be a day one purchase for me. And just only because we've talked about it so often.
Yeah, right.
I would day one it. If you day one it, we get in there on them seas.
All three of us day one it. We only played the game together.
Oh, gosh.
Also, before we move on to our next topic, this is a quick sidebar. Chris, actually, we'll do this at the end. I will bring it up at the end. You'll know what I'm talking about. Okay. Let's move on to what's going to be happening this Friday. This Friday is Friday the 13th, a day that lives in infamy for always being a day full of bad luck. And yet, for Microsoft, this will be a day that lives on in history for them.
Yes.
Truly.
Mason, what's happening on Friday the 13th?
Well, Friday the 13th is supposed to be the finalization of the acquisition by Microsoft for Activision Blizzard. It is supposed to be a done deal this Friday.
Yes.
This has been such a long row, yes. And it's so weird to think that in 2 days it's done.
It's going to be finally over. And then in addition, like, to that, we got some other news in conjunction with this finalization of the acquisition. So recently, the CEO who we spoke on earlier, Bobby Kotick, our favorite CEO, was interviewed by James Corden during an employee meeting about the acquisition, about other technology, like future technology. And finally, they did talk about Guitar Hero, of all things. And what's interesting is something was hinted at during this interview, and that is the potential for, after this acquisition happens, the potential for there to be a new Guitar Hero. And if you remember correctly, the last Guitar Hero we got was in 2015.
Crazy. It's been about 8 years now.
Yeah, and it was called Guitar Hero Live. There is no official confirmation that there will be a new Guitar Hero, but all sources seem to indicate that Microsoft is going to be extremely interested in exploring that possibility and really kind of trying to navigate this reemergence of Guitar Hero. So we'll kind of have to play the wait and see approach to see if that happens.
I don't see this actually happening, and here's why. So when Guitar Hero came out, the initial Guitar Hero, the biggest music genre at the time was like punk rock bands, indie rock bands. What was that music? What was the rock festival that was down in Columbus?
Rock on the Range?
Rock on the Range. Like, rock music at that time was massive. So it made sense for you to go ahead and create these brand new guitar peripherals, so you can play on your consoles, play with your buddies, play together. But I don't see it being as relevant now in terms of like music. And if you're going to actually like have or attempt to try to bring Guitar Hero back, you know who you have to have on the cover. And I hate to say it, but this is the only way that I can see this making the money that they expected to make. You have to have Taylor Swift on the cover.
But she's not rock music.
But she plays guitar.
Boo.
Sorry. I don't care what you guys say.
I would say a better fit for Guitar Hero would be like Imagine Dragons.
I agree with that statement. I say for rock band, it would be Imagine Dragons. But if we're just talking straight guitar, there is no bigger guitar player in the world right now.
I agree.
Taylor Swift, Ed Sheeran. You need to have, it's going to be Guitar Hero Indie is what it's going to be called. Guitar Hero Country Pop. Guitar Hero Sadness.
If that's what's on the thing, cancel it. Just cancel it.
Yeah. Nope.
That is the only way this will work. Because I'm Imagine Dragons is the next band that I need to see.
But they're very good. I had the opportunity to see them before they blew up to the big band that they are, and it was such a good show. Very high energy, put on a great show. They've got great music. So
yeah, I've seen their concerts like on YouTube live, and it seems like it's such a moment. But I don't see Guitar Hero being a thing unless you're willing to put in the biggest guitar players.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's going to be Taylor Swift. Unless Taylor Swift is on board by putting her face on the cover, there's no point even trying. Because, again, you would have to create brand new peripherals. And I know Microsoft would not just make that exclusive.
I just don't see
the value in it. But to be fair, I'm not an executive, so what do I know? So let's move over. Again, we'll stick in the Activision Blizzard realm. And this one actually has to go to Overwatch. Chris, do you have this story for us about something that Overwatch, and specifically Activision Blizzard, is doing that would be considered scummy?
Yeah, so there's a new season in Overwatch. Just came out yesterday. What's going on? There's some cool new skins, right? You know, new season, new skins. Nice. So usually you can go into the store and just buy whatever said skin you want, but not this time.
How much do skins normally cost?
I would say 10 to 15 bucks.
Yeah, that's usually like the standard price. I would say like $9.99 and yeah. Premium skin. I would say like maybe a premium skin would be maybe at most like $19.99. And that's like a really premium skin.
But like when you're buying, because again, I don't play Overwatch, so, and I don't really ever buy cosmetic DLC. But this $9.99 or $19.99 skin, is this just for one character or is it for like a group of skins?
It's usually for a group, right, Chris?
For what, the $9.99?
No, yeah, for like the premium items.
Okay. You're saying both two different things.
Oh, sorry.
So for the cosmetic items, so that skin that you pay for, is it only for one character or is it like a group of like, hey, this theme for this group of characters?
It could go either way. Okay. So the one we're going to be talking about is a group, I'm pretty sure.
Yes. So this new skin package is the Ultimate Battle Pass Bundle, which the skins that are featured is a Lilith Inaris skin, as well as Moira and Pharah. So yes. four skins.
Sorry, I'm a child.
Oh my god. Oh no.
I just heard it. I just heard it. That's funny. That's good.
Oh, Devin. I didn't even notice it until you said that. Oh my goodness.
So how much are these skins for more than three characters?
$40. Now, you have to take into consideration you're not just getting those skins. So you are getting the battle pass for the season, which is 10 bucks. And you get 20 like level skips in the battle pass.
Okay.
And you get 2,000 Overwatch coins, which is that's about $20 in coins.
All right. So my like, question
skins.
So how much was the actual Overwatch game? How much does it cost to like
play the game?
Yeah.
Zero.
Okay, because I'm saying here...
Wait, Overwatch 2 is free to play?
Yeah.
But how much was the original Overwatch?
Probably 60.
Yeah, it was 60 bucks.
I'm seeing here that the original game was 40 bucks on release.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay. Oh,
never mind. So then now they're charging DLC, that is the price
of
the original game.
Correct, because they went to the free-to-play model.
But you know what's even more interesting? Apparently, in August, Blizzard sent out a survey asking players if they'd be willing to pay $45 for the new hero skins. Mm-hmm. And they said no. The players said no. So then Blizzard was like, all right, 40 bucks.
They reduced it by $5.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah. People didn't want to pay 45.
What's scummy about this bundle is, and here's the issue, is you can't buy these skins
separately
outside of it. Because I was actually on yesterday because I play it because it's easy to put down if like Arya starts being a handful. And I was like, oh, that's a really cool looking skin. I wonder how much it is. I was like, oh, I can only find it in this bundle. I can't find it elsewhere.
Which is a shame. Because like at least like in the past, what you could do, at least in Overwatch 1, is they would release the bundle. Let's say it was for Halloween, like Halloween skins. They had a bundle, mm-hmm. but you had the option to get them separately.
Yep. Exactly. And that's exactly how they should have did it. But they wanted to force a higher price on you so that you're putting more money into the game. And then they're giving you, 2,000 Overwatch coins, which is $20 worth of like skins. But basically you're going to run out of that currency. And then you're like, oh man, I'm only like 100 away, but the lowest amount I can buy is $5 worth. So I guess I'm going to buy this $5 worth of shit. So it's like, it's a weird spiral they can put you in.
Yeah. And based on a player survey that was conducted, a lot of players have been saying in regards to this news that they would rather use that money, like that $40 that they would spend on this battle pass for a new game.
Yeah.
I know they say that, but let's be honest here. They're actually buying the $40 battle pass.
You think?
Yeah, 100%. The reason there is, Activision Blizzard is not going to release something they know people aren't going to buy. And mm-hmm. though as predatory as they are, they know that people are going to spend this money.
Oh, believe me, I saw several people with those skins yesterday. So, like, in at least every match, there was at least one or two people that had them. So, yes, that is 100% true.
Mm-hmm.
I can't talk because in Forza Horizon, I have absolutely bought the DLC for $7.99. And to be fair, it's only $7.99. But also to be fair, I have not touched a single one of the cars that I paid for my DLC. It's just because I'm collecting them.
Oh, I understand.
Yeah, it has nothing to do at all with the gameplay. It's just I see that there's an empty space and I have to fill it. That it goes to my perfectionist and completionist individual of a personality. So let's move away from Activision Blizzard. Good luck if you're paying $40 for skins. I personally wouldn't, but that's neither here nor there.
Real quick, right before we move away from this topic, real fast.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a very controversial opinion here.
Okay, what you got?
I actually missed the loot boxes in Overwatch 1.
That is a controversial opinion, Chris.
That is very controversial.
We might get kicked off for that
Spice. All right, elaborate.
So in Overwatch 1, just by playing the game, I was just getting random loot boxes mm-hmm. without ever having to pay a dime and just getting stuff.
So like, you were doing free to play?
Yeah, 100%. Like, okay. I bought the game, yes, but I was free to play and I was just getting free shit. In Overwatch 2, basically, if you don't buy the battle pass, they don't give you a whole lot. Like, you do get some credits, like, through the season to just spend on the free skins that you can buy. I'll call them free, but you're spending the free currency that you don't have to pay for. But it's not as much as the currency you pay for, and they're not as cool as the one that you actually pay for.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually do miss the loot box system from Overwatch 1. Interesting.
That is a hot take, Chris.
That is a hot take. But I can see where you're coming from.
Yes.
See, a lot of people in the Forza Horizon realm actually hated it because it's kind of like loot boxes. It's more like a casino gambling, like a little slot machine where you can like win like three different cars and like a bunch of money. And a lot of people says it throws too much at you. And I'll talk a little bit about this later, but Forza Motorsport does not do that at all.
Nice.
And so there's quite a lot of discussion as to which system is better, the getting a lot of loot or getting nothing, but we'll talk about that at a different point.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move away from Activision Blizzard and let's move away from loot boxes, even though Chris wants them. Let's talk about something that actually impacts both of you, but it does not impact me.
Yes.
I have a lot of streaming services. Mm-hmm, It seems like everybody and their mother has a streaming service.
Yep.
And one of the ones that you have to have if you wish to watch anime, specifically if you're a major fan of anime, is Crunchyroll. Now, do you two have Crunchyroll subscriptions?
I do.
Okay, I do not. Well, if you are a Crunchyroll user, you may be entitled to compensation.
Yes.
Apparently, who could have guessed, Crunchyroll was selling your information to third parties.
And just so you listeners are aware, Crunchyroll is now owned by Sony.
Oh, Sony.
Sony will get their money regardless.
So just keep that in mind. Like, Sony did buy Crunchyroll not that long ago. And in addition to that, before this purchase of Crunchyroll, Crunchyroll had purchased Funimation, right? So... essentially, Crunchyroll is the only source or only streaming service that you can reliably watch a lot of like anime on, at least a good selection. Yeah, you've got Hulu, you've got Netflix. There is some anime on Disney Plus, there is some on HBO Max, but for the most part, Crunchyroll is the kind of behemoth, if you will, that is on top of the anime industry, and you could argue that they've got kind of a monopoly on anime streaming.
They truly do.
So this lawsuit doesn't surprise me that they were collecting user data and selling it without their permission.
So after the class action lawsuit, I guess Crunchyroll got hit with a $16 million lawsuit.
Yes.
And so if you are a current subscriber, or if you are a subscriber between September 8th, 2020 and September 20th, 2023, you could be eligible for up to $30 in compensation.
Yep. So if you wished, if you are a user that falls within that time frame, you need to submit a claim form by December 12th, 2023 in order to get that money. So if you want to fill out that claim form, you can find it on animenewsnetwork.com, or you could just do a simple Google search of just say like claim form Crunchyroll lawsuit or something like that, and you should be able to fill out the form.
They're also saying that if you are an affected user, that they will send you an email. However, I do not trust that because they have zero reason to send you an email.
No, I don't see them doing that either.
How do you guys feel about this? Is this going to stop you from using Crunchyroll? How are you going to use your $30 if you get eligible? How do you guys feel? Because you guys are current users.
Mm-hmm. Not going to stop me. Unfortunately, there's no other options.
Yeah, I'm with Chris. I'm probably not going to stop watching because, I mean, there is the alternative legal way of streaming anime, which is HIDIVE. They're another one that does anime streaming. There's Retro Crush on Android, and I think they might be on iPhone as well. But they focus mainly on old school anime, like from the 80s, 90s, and I think that's it, actually. For Retro Crush. But if you want to legally watch anime conveniently, Crunchyroll is the only option.
Is it convenient? Because I was watching a couple videos basically saying that Crunchyroll's UI website is just not good.
It's trash.
It's ass.
It is ass. The only reason why I say convenient is because they have basically any show that you would want to watch.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
It's just their interface really blows. Like, I can't tell you how many times I'm watching a show and it needs to buffer. Like, and it's nothing wrong with my internet or anything like that. It's just the platform.
Mm-hmm.
You would think they would invest in, if they're getting all this money and they're paying out $60 million in losses, you would think that they would invest in making their UI more user-friendly and to where you don't have to buffer 30-minute shows.
Well, they spend a lot of their budget on obtaining licenses.
True.
That
unfortunately is where a lot of the budget goes for Crunchyroll, to my knowledge, is that they spend a vast majority on it, on obtaining these licenses from Japan or elsewhere to make sure they have the newest, greatest hotness or whatever.
Yeah, but if they're being bankrolled by Sony, that shouldn't really be a thing.
No, they should have the money to invest in a better infrastructure when it comes to their streaming. So hopefully they do that.
Now, anywho, let's move over to our very last topic. It actually has to do with films.
Yes.
So I'm going to ask you both a question. Chris, what was the longest film that you sat down and watched all the way through?
Avengers Endgame.
And Avengers Endgame has a runtime of what? 3 hours? 2 hours? 50 minutes?
Something like that.
It's a little over 3 hours, if I'm not mistaken.
It's 3 hours and 2 minutes, 182 minutes long.
Yes.
Okay, Mason, what is the longest movie that you sat down and watched all the way through?
It's either the, again, with Avengers or The Irishman.
Yes, The Irishman is a Netflix exclusive. It has a runtime of 3 hours and 29 minutes, or a total of 209 minutes. So Martin Scorsese, this really wouldn't be that big of a deal for you, Mason.
No.
But Martin Scorsese has a movie that's coming out that has a 3 hour and 30 minute runtime for Killers of the Flower Moon.
And he also directed The Irishman.
He also directed The Irishman.
So following a little bit of a trend.
Yes, but the difference between The Irishman and Killers of the Flower Moon, which I guess has a runtime of 3 hours and 26 minutes total, the difference between the two is The Irishman went to streaming exclusively, went straight to Netflix.
Yes.
Killers of the Flower Moon is actually going straight to theaters.
Which is, I think that's an interesting take.
Why do you think so?
Because it seems the trend of the industry right now is to at least shift to streaming. That seems to be like the trend. And for Martin Scorsese to, because you just said, you know, he did the Netflix Irishman movie that went straight to streaming. So it's interesting that he's doing straight to like movie theater with this one.
I think the little bit of the pandemic had to do a little bit with the original one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But even then, are either of you guys going to the theater to watch a 3-hour and 26-minute movie?
Probably not. No.
Why?
Because I don't want to miss anything.
True. Okay, because you're concerned about going to the bathroom.
Yes. And I can't pause.
Can't pause. Chris, why wouldn't you want to?
I'm not the biggest movie guy. I would not go to a movie theater and sit that long. First, I just don't like public. Second, that's all, you know, like Mason said, I'm going to miss something because I'm at some point need to go to the bathroom, and going to the bathroom at the movie theater is the fucking worst ever because you've missed whatever.
I mean, I was so fortunate that when I saw Endgame, I didn't have to use the bathroom. But like my second time viewing the movie, I did have to use the bathroom. But I was very lucky that, you know, first time around, I didn't have to go and I didn't miss anything.
See, I'm very fortunate. I usually just need to go to the bathroom before or after. I don't recall the last time I actually had to go to the bathroom in the middle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I will say Martin Scorsese actually has thoughts and opinions because people are asking him, like, how are you going to put a movie in theaters that is this long? And his response is, people say it's 3 hours, but come on. You can sit in front of the TV and watch something for 5 hours. He's talking about binge watching like I did yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there are many people who watch theater for 3.5 hours. So like theatrical plays, there are real actors on stage. You just can't get up and walk around. Give it that respect and give cinema some respect.
Well, so the thing with plays is there's intermission.
There is intermissions. That is 100% true.
I mean, that argument is null and void there because, yes, these theater productions are long, but at least they're broken up.
Yeah, I think the longest theatrical production I ever watched was about 2 hours, but at the hour mark, there was a 15-minute, 20-minute intermission.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Martin Scorsese really is hitting the right demographic with this. Like, three-plus-hour movies need to go directly to streaming.
Yeah, I don't see a lot of people going to the theater to see this.
I don't either. I don't know many people who says, oh, I need to see Killers of the Flower Moon this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I love Martin Scorsese. He's a phenomenal director. I love Leonardo DiCaprio. He's a phenomenal actor. I love what's-his-face? I can't think of it. His name. What's the actor from Raging Bull?
I have no idea what Raging Bull is.
Robert De Niro.
Oh, okay.
But that was like one of his earliest films. Robert De Niro, where he plays a boxer.
Mm-hmm.
If you have not seen it, I highly recommend it. It's a phenomenal movie. But yeah, Brendan Fraser is in it. Nice.
I'll only watch it if it's 3 hours long.
But yeah, the big time names, you know, Robert De Niro, you got, you know, Leonardo, you got Brendan Fraser. So
it's got a star-studded cast, but again, I don't see a lot of people going to the theaters. Mm-hmm. Like Avengers is one thing. Avengers, obviously, that is a cultural moment. You're going to rush to the theaters to see that.
I
don't know. I probably would see it because I have MoviePass. But then I know I'm going into the theater when there's light out and I'm leaving the theater when there's no light.
Because like one of the longer-ish movies that I saw in theaters was The Revenant.
Never saw that.
That was really good. But that one was only 2 hours and 36 minutes.
And even then, 2 hours and 36 minutes is still a long amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, true.
All right, but let's... That is our final topic. Now, we haven't done one of these in a while, but let's do our little bit of review segment because I actually have something to review for you guys. Crit, too.
What you got?
So I recently actually downloaded and I paid to get the access early for the new Xbox Forza Motorsport.
And that's on Game Pass, correct?
It sure is, and it is available now if you're a Game Pass subscriber.
Ooh. So
because I've always been a Forza Motorsports stan, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to buy the pass to get this game early. And I even did something that I've never done before for a Forza Motorsport game.
What's that?
I actually bought a racing wheel for my Xbox.
Oh, you finally did.
Holy shit.
Sure did.
Because you've been talking about that for a while.
Yeah, and like it literally, I actually got the game. I want to say I got the game October 6th. So it came out on the 10th. I got the game October 6th. So I had about
4 or 5 days
early. And I was able to play the first day on control. And I was like, you know what? This is actually pretty good physics. So then I ordered the racing wheel off Amazon and it came in the next day.
Did you get that on like a Prime deal?
It wasn't a Prime deal, but it did say it was discounted. No, actually, I did not get a Prime deal. I actually got refurbished.
Oh, okay.
Yep, nice. I got refurbished and I got a warranty on the refurbished.
Can't beat that.
No, nope. I absolutely can't. But I was a little taken aback when I opened up the box and the box was already open. Then I remembered, I was like, oh, this is refurbished.
Yeah, it's refurbished. So that makes sense.
Yeah. So here's the kicker. I've talked about this before. I had a racing wheel for the PS5 for Gran Turismo. I got a racing wheel for our Forza Motorsport on the Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
They're both Logitech. They're both the exact same platform. The racing wheels will not work with either console. You cannot switch the racing wheel to work with either console. You have to buy them separately.
So stupid.
That's dumb.
What you do not need to buy separately, however, is your wheels and your shift knob.
Okay.
So I didn't realize this. So I'm sitting here and I undo my PS5's racing wheel. And I'm looking at the connections and I'm looking at the connections on the Xbox. And I'm like, oh, this is plug and play. So nice. I just plug it up. Yeah, I literally just plugged it up and everything worked perfectly to the new Xbox. I didn't have to remove the PS5 wheels at all.
That's awesome.
Or the pedals or the shifter. So I actually never even unboxed the racing wheels from the Xbox's one. I just kept the Sony ones attached.
Mm-hmm.
I'd send them back and just buy them separately. It'd probably be cheaper, right?
Well, I didn't realize that I could just buy them separately.
No, I mean, now that you know, you could send it back and then buy them separately, right?
No, it's just too much work. I'll just keep them both because I would eventually like to buy... No, I'd eventually like to buy another racing setup for the PlayStation. I just don't have the space to have both of them at the same time.
Okay.
Yep, so I'm going to box this up until I'm done with Xbox.
Nice.
So I've been playing Forza Motorsport, and I am a racing stan. I've been playing Forza Horizon, Gran Turismo 7, and before that, all the Forza Motorsports. So I actually was pretty excited to download this. Now, now that the game has came out, I can talk about this on the podcast, because that NDA is officially expired. I actually helped a little bit with Forza Motorsport. My friend who works at Market Research actually reached out to me, and they actually had me go in and talk with the Forza Motorsport people about what I want to see, specifically Turnton, that's the developer.
Wow.
Talk about what I actually wanted to see in the next Forza Motorsport game. So I gave my opinions. I said that one thing that it seems like we're always getting a lot of cars from Forza Horizon, and it doesn't seem like there's really... I don't build a bond with these cars. All I do is buy them, I race them, I move on to the next one. So one thing I noticed that this game does not have, it does no longer has like loot boxes that gives you cars.
Okay.
One thing I also said in the turn 10, I guess, discussion was racing actually requires us to have practice sessions. Like you actually have to practice. Let me get to know the track. Let me get to bond with the car just so I can experience what the car is like before I race it. This game actually has a practice session.
Nice.
Another thing that I said is that in racing, pit stops are actually kind of important, and it seems like the days of us just going into a pit, there being no people, and us just driving out is over. Like Gran Turismo can do it, Formula One can do it. I don't see why the next racing game, and they didn't tell us what the racing game was, but I knew what it was. I don't see why the next racing game shouldn't have this, and it has this. And I also said in today's day and age, you need to have a full 24-hour day and night cycle. You need to have weather. You need to have everything. Everything off the track needs to be just as important. I should be able to feel like I could drive off the track in this game. I shouldn't feel like the world only exists on this track. It should feel like there's a world outside of it. And sure enough, there actually is.
Oh.
If it starts raining, you'll see umbrellas go up. You'll see camping. You'll see like helicopters. You'll see like actual things in the sky. Full day and night cycle. The physics of this game is rather amazing. I've actually spent just like an hour just driving around the track, tuning the car just so I can get better lap times.
Mm-hmm.
I actually appreciate the practice session. Now, a lot of people are quite upset because, like, you have to, before you can buy any upgrades for the car, you actually have to level your car up first.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So every time you take a different, like, turn, or every time you go around the track, you gain experience points. The better you take a turn, the more experience points you get.
Right.
Well, for one car that I'm currently driving, I actually have to get to level 20 before I can add any upgrades to it. And a lot of people don't like that. A lot of people feel like, oh, I should be able to max my car out first moment. I disagree mm-hmm. with that statement, but I also don't think that it should be this restrictive.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the problem is, let's say you buy this Porsche and you max out this Porsche. If you buy the same Porsche, you have to max out this next Porsche the exact same way before you can add the parts to it. So it does not, it's not car specific. It's not like brand specific. It's car specific.
I got
you. So a lot of people had a lot of criticism on that. But I will say the racing is actually really good. The artificial intelligence behind the cars actually feel realistic. I was doing a couple practice sessions where I would mess up a turn and go off the track. I would see behind me another car would do the exact same thing. So, and the racing is rather competitive. I played online with a couple friends and we all had racing wheels and it was like bare knuckling. We were close as possible. It is a lot of fun. It is a much harder racing game. Like this is one that actually feels authentic to racing. So I don't know how user friendly this game is, but for somebody who's always been playing racing games, this is exactly what I want out of a racing game.
Nice.
Cool. That's good shit, and it does sound like they did kind of take into consideration your input.
Yep. And this is a game that's going to be a game for service. So you pay your price point, but this is a game they're going to be building on for the next couple of years. They are not doing yearly or bi-yearly installations of this.
Okay.
It is going to be this game. They're going to build upon it.
Okay. That's pretty good.
I do have my criticisms though. And one of the biggest things that I've always criticized Forza Motorsport on was it does not seem like they ever really upgrade their like paint engine or their like decal engines. And this is still true. That is the exact same one mm-hmm. in all games. Body kits. The body kits are still utilizing the same Forza Motorsport body kits, where it's kind of weird because Forza Horizon actually improved this significantly. So it doesn't seem like they took the positive successes out of Forza Horizon and moved them into Forza Motorsport. It seems like they kept the games fully separate, which I don't think is great. But overall, I am a big fan. It is very addictive. After I'm done with this episode, I am most likely going to be booting that game up. So because I say this game made quite a lot of improvements, but I will say that it did not improve in the areas that have been the oldest. And the fact that it actually only has 20 tracks at start, they're going to be adding tracks, but they're quite a large glaring omission. I'm happy to give this game a 4.5 on Informed Gamers out of 5. I really like this game.
Okay. That's still a pretty good score. Awesome.
Yep.
It's good to hear.
So, Chris, I mentioned that I was going to mention this to you because you see that I've been watching Twisted Metal.
Yeah.
But I say you've been playing Payday 3.
Uh-huh.
Give us a quick little overview because I'm so curious what you think of Payday 3.
I like it a lot. If you played the first one, you'll probably like this one too. It's kind of more of the same. Mm-hmm. The only issue I've seen so far, I haven't gotten to play that much. I've played maybe 3 or 4 levels. And the only thing that I can criticize them on at the moment, after they finally solved their server issues, is there's not many levels. There's, I want to say maybe like 8, maybe if that.
It seems kind of low.
Yeah, right? That's what I saw. I was like, now, mind you, it's on Game Pass. I think their purchase price is only like $40 or $50, if I had to guess. I don't know. Don't quote me on that one. But overall, fun game. I've always loved Payday. Payday 2 was freaking awesome.
Well, since it's on Game Pass, I'm definitely going to see about downloading. If you wish to, I've never played a Payday game, so if y'all two want to hop in and help me out, I'd greatly appreciate it.
I'll help you rob a bank.
All right. I've never played Payday, but I'm always down to try.
Let's set up some time sometime soon, and all three of us will try to rob a bank together.
Sounds good to me.
All right, Mason, before we close out, do you have anything for our review segment?
I'm trying to think. Not really, no.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for joining us here at another installment of the Uninformed Gamers. If you like what we do here, be sure to give us a like, a subscribe, and a share wherever you may listen to our podcast. Our podcast can be found anywhere, and I do mean anywhere you can find a podcast. You know me as Devin, also known as Darkness Tiger. If you wish to play with me on Xbox, it's Darkness Tiger. If you wish to connect with me on PlayStation, it's Darkness Tiger 2. If you wish to reach out to us on Twitter, it's at Uninformed Gamers. And if you wish to reach out to us on TikTok, it's at Uninformed Gamers. All right, gentlemen, go ahead and do your sign-offs.
I am Chameleon, or Chris. You can find me on Twitter at Chameleon Games.
Yes, and I have been Mason, as always, or Rad Dreams from Rad Dreams Review on YouTube. You can find me at Rad_Dreams on Twitch. And like Devin stated, if you found any sort of value out of this podcast, be sure to tell at least one person about us, and that'll definitely help us grow. So I would appreciate any help.
All right. Thank you all for listening. We will catch you next time. Bye.
Later.
Peace.